This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Christian Camargo. Today, we're wrapping up the Hinckley Institute's Ballot Ready 2018 series with a forum that looks at Utah's Proposition 4, the initiative to create an independent redistricting commission. The idea behind the initiative is to move the process of political redistricting, which occurs once every decade after the federal census, out of the direct hands of lawmakers by including an appointed independent 7-member commission to participate in the process of redrawing district boundaries. Proposition 4 affects redistricting in Utah in 3 main ways. 1. It creates a 7-member appointed commission to participate in the process of formulating redistricting plans. 2. It imposes requirements on the legislature's redistricting process. And 3. It establishes standards to which redistricting plans must comply. Supporters of the initiative argue that by doing so, it will help combat gerrymandering, where districts are drawn along partisan lines. Opponents argue that it will open up years of litigation for the state on the constitutionality of the initiative. Speaking on today's panel, Utah Republican Senator Todd Weiler of District 23, Better Boundaries co-chair Jeff Wright, and leading today's conversation about the ins and outs of Proposition 4 is Salt Lake Tribune reporter Benjamin Wood. Here's Benjamin Wood.
Every 10 years, the maps that structure our elections are redrawn, and like so many things, the devil is in the details. Small shifts in the electoral boundaries can change who is able to vote in a particular race, and consequently, who is elected to represent those districts. During our nation's history, both major political parties have abused the power of redistricting, drawing themselves into safe seats and their opponents into inescapable corners. This year, Utah voters are asked to consider a new process, one in which an independent, bipartisan, unelected panel draws new maps based on a series of guidelines that emphasize deference to city, county, and geographical boundaries. It's an extremely important topic, and we have two very informed guests with us today who I expect might have a thing or two to say. If you would both introduce yourselves, give your quick elevator pitch on your position for toward Proposition 4, and tell us what you think our 4th Congressional District looks like. To me, it's a letter L, which is quite appropriate for Mia Love. Why don't we start with you?
My name is Jeff Wright, and I'm the Republican co-chair of the Better Boundaries campaign that has gathered 190,000 signatures from fellow Utahns across the state to put this measure on the ballot, Prop 4. And we're asking you to vote and support Prop 4 because we fundamentally believe that voters should pick their politicians, not politicians picking their voters. We're going to get into the details of the independent commission and the standards that will frame how the districts are drawn in the future if this passes. But I want to back up a little bit and ask all of you students and guests here today to put on your critical thinking hat and ask motivations and biases. My narrative, my motivations, my biases started actually here at the Hinckley Institute. It wasn't as palatial as it is today back in that day, but it started here. I was a Hinckley intern. I ran for ASUU office under the Reinventing Government banner. I was a college Republican. I think there were 5 of us. And I learned, I gained a deep respect for those who serve, for serving, and for participating, and for breaking down status quo biases, to be a reformer. And so that's why I'm here today, is because I like to break down status quo biases, whether that be in my personal life, my business life, and in my public life as well. And I'm a reformer, and I think that we all want to move towards a more perfect union, and reform is good. The Jeffersonian concept of a marginal revolution every 5 years is good, and so that's why I'm here today. Those are my biases. I put that on the table so you know where I'm coming from. I don't like status quo. In business, if status quo bias survived and thrived, we wouldn't have Uber, we wouldn't have Tesla, we wouldn't have Apple. I think the same can be applied to government. There's a better way to do something. And just because it's not, perfect doesn't mean we should leave it alone. So that's where I'm coming from, and that's my narrative.
Does the 4th District look like anything in particular to you?
It's green.
Senator, your opening pitch.
Thank you. So first of all, thank you. Thank you for hosting this. I think it's an important debate. And I just want to say, I think Proposition 4 is well-intentioned. I think it's trying to take politics out of a process that is inherently political. And about 20 years ago, I was a delegate when Jeff Wright ran for Congress. Under this Proposition 4, and I'll bet you none of you know this, neither of us could have served on this so-called independent commission for 5 years after that. Why? Because I would be discriminated against for being a delegate. Jeff would be discriminated against for having run for office. Anyone who votes in a primary could not serve on this commission for 5 years. And after you leave commission, you can't run for political office for 4 more years, which is a violation of the Constitution. There's a lot of constitutional problems. This, if you want to, I'm a lawyer, if you want to keep lawyers in this state employed for the next 20 years litigating about what this proposition means, then by all means, please vote for it.
Why don't we start there, Mr. Wright? How would this independent panel be composed, and why are there these restrictions on the membership?
First of all, let me say that Better Boundaries has never said we're taking the politics out of it. You cannot take politics out of a human being. As Aristotle said, we're political animals. So we're not trying to take politics out of this. What we're trying to do is take conflict of interest out of the process. We're setting up checks and balances and combating conflict of interest. So we've never pretended like we're going to take the politics out of it. The commission, the independent commission, is made up of Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated voters. And only two of those commissioners, if they had voted in a primary, cannot participate. And that was specifically set up so somebody couldn't change their party affiliation and say, I'm an unaffiliated voter, if they had voted in a Democratic or a Republican primary. So we really feel like this commission, with a two-thirds majority, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, doesn't take away the politics, it takes away the conflict of interest.
Go ahead, Senator.
Well, let's talk about conflicts of interest. This Proposition 4 creates so many conflicts of interest. The one I'm going to tell you about is for the Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court. This Chief Justice gets to appoint commission members if the process breaks down. The Chief Justice, whether it's a male or female, gets to weigh in on the maps. And like I already said, this proposition is an invitation for litigation on 20 or 30 different subjects. I don't think I'll have time to go all into them. And those will all end up before whom? The Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court. You want to talk about conflicts of interest? Proposition 4 creates more than it resolves.
I see you shaking your head. Why don't we take a quick rebuttal and then we'll get back to it.
Well, first of all, that isn't correct, Senator. The Chief Justice doesn't appoint anybody to the commission. The governor, the legislative minority, and majority leadership are the ones who appoint the commissioner. So the Chief Justice does not appoint a commissioner. Second of all, this is meant to be constitutional. I think my sparring partner up here is going to throw constitutionality out a lot up here. And we specifically designed this to be constitutional. By the way, we looked around the country. 10 states have implemented independent commissions, and they have withstood constitutional arguments against them. You know, when we looked to Iowa, when we looked to Arizona, when we looked to California on how their independent commissions worked, we took that into account and we made it fit into Utah's constitutional framework. This is a Utah solution to a Utah problem, because our commission recommends the final map to the legislature. The legislature can vote up or down on this, and if they choose to vote down on it, then within 7 days they have to report to the public why they changed the map. And I think it's going to be very difficult for any legislature to come before the people and say, this is why they did it, because you immediately ask who benefits and why.
Let me jump in. As moderator's prerogative, I'm sure there's many points we'll be able to build into some of our responses. Fundamentally, this proposition is about taking the primary drawing power from the legislature, giving it to this independent panel, which would then submit maps to the legislature. So my question to start here is, to the senator, can we trust you to draw the maps for the people who will then vote for you? And to Mr. Wright, why can't we trust Senator Wyler with that power? Why don't we start with you, Senator?
Thank you. I've got to start off with reading from the actual proposition that Mr. Wright put forward. If an appointing authority fails to appoint a commissioner or fill a vacancy by the deadlines provided, then the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the State of Utah shall appoint that commissioner within 14 calendar days after the failure to appoint or fill a vacancy, which is exactly what I said. If the appointment process breaks down, then the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Utah has to appoint the vacancy, and the Chief Justice also weighs in on the maps. Look it. If you went from a red state like Utah to a blue state, the arguments on redistricting would just flip-flop. You would have the Republicans saying what the Democrats are saying here, and vice versa, and because this is a political process. The Founding Fathers gave some spoils of victories to the winners. And you may not like that, but that's what the U.S. Constitution does. That's what the state constitution does. I have never been involved in redistricting. I joined the Utah legislature about 3 months after redistricting was finalized. But of all the maps, there are four maps, I believe, that the legislature approved in an October 2011 special session. And three of the maps for the state school boards and the state house seats and the state senate seats, those were approved unanimously between the Republicans and Democrats, with the Democratic leaders standing up and praising the Republicans for their fairness. The only one that was not unanimous was the congressional maps, which you see here. I wasn't involved in that process, but here's the thing. If you don't like what an elected official does in terms of redistricting, you can vote against them the next year. If you don't like what an independent commissioner does, a cabal of so-called independent people, you have no recourse. There's no accountability. And so this is an inherently political process, and instead of doing it instead of holding people accountable, you're going to elect this cabal of people that you have no way of getting out of office, and you're going to say, well, they'll do a better job than the people we elected. And I just reject that premises.
Give me 1 second, Jeff. Senator, you and I have had this conversation before, and you've mentioned this idea of if the voters are displeased, they can vote elsewise. Yeah. Is there not the potential for problematic situation where, because voters have been drawn into districts, their ability to then vote out a representative they're displeased with is diminished? Is that not a potential problem?
I mean, if you go back to 2011, 98% of the legislators won't even be there in 2019. I mean, we have this turnstile already. And I understand because we had this trip talk. You can go listen to that. But if that's bad, then how much worse is it if you can't touch these so-called independent people? Nobody's truly independent. I mean, anyone who's thinking and with a conscience has an opinion, has a bias, and that's what we deal with. And so to pretend like these magical seven people are going to be completely independent, I can promise you what the map's going to look like. It's going to guarantee a district for the Democrats, which I believe this has always been about. And right now we have Jim Matheson, who won that weird L-shaped green thing the first year it was created, and we have Ben McAdams, who says he's winning it right now on his internal polls. And so if this is so bad, then why do we have competitive races in Utah?
Mr. Ray, go ahead and take a few minutes. I'm sure there's several points in there to rebut.
What you call a cabal, I call my fellow voters, my fellow citizens.
Well, they're not primary voters. We know that.
Senator, let's give him a minute.
And I think that, again, if the voters of Utah, we have the 39th lowest voter turnout. Why? Because I think people are dissatisfied with the system. And I think gerrymandering is a part of that. Gerrymandering has been around since the beginning of our country. The first gerrymandered district was in 1812. Eldridge Gerry, the governor of Massachusetts, created a salamander-looking district, and they called it a gerrymander. So it's been around a long time. What has changed is extreme gerrymandering. We see that across this country. We see consumer data, big data used to carve out and divide people. Now, I'm not saying that is actually the case here in Utah. And what we at Better Boundaries have said from the very beginning is this is not about an outcome. This is about a process. This is about a structural reform. And this is about the future. And we think of bringing transparency. We think of bringing accountability, bringing an open process, not using partisan data, not taking incumbent addresses into consideration is going to serve the state of Utah for generations to come.
Go ahead, Senator.
Well, you know, so the last point that Mr. Wright made was the incumbent addresses. And part of what this Proposition 4 does is it seeks to set out the principles, but it does so in a very confusing mixing matter. And I'll give you a couple of examples of that. So one of those is not taking the incumbents' addresses into account. By the way, that's one of the few things that the courts that have dealt with redistricting lawsuits have said, is you can take incumbents' addresses into consideration. Most of the things that in this proposition the courts have not recognized as legitimate. But the initiative's second redistricting priority is minimizing the division of municipalities and counties. That's in lines 113 through 115 of the proposition. Unincorporated islands, however, where residents exist within municipalities or between adjacent municipalities, this requirement, the second requirement that I just mentioned, could result in those pockets being forced into non-contiguous districts. The initiative also requires the legislature and the commission to consider the standards of preserving traditional neighborhoods and local communities of interest. Those sound great. What do they mean? Those standards may conflict, and the initiative gives no indication on which should take priority. And lastly, because the legislature and the commission are required to adhere in a certain order of priority to these redistricting standards to the greatest extent practical, that's line 108, lower priority standards may be impossible to comply with after adhering to the higher priority standards. So the devil is in the details, and the details here are very ambiguous, which will lead to years of litigation.
Actually, we think this stops litigation and has proven to stop litigation in other states that have implemented independent commissions. So we have a lot of litigation across this country. Maryland, Wisconsin, Democrats were gerrymandered, Republicans were gerrymandered. These things went to the Supreme Court. They're going to continue to come up. We actually think the Better Boundaries and this initiative stops litigation because it puts in standards. It puts in a process. And I think the Utah public can feel good about that process, good about that transparent process. So, you know, devil's in the details. I encourage you to all read this because I think the devil in the details benefits us.
That's Jeff Wright, co-chair for Better Boundaries, a bipartisan coalition that seeks to create an independent redistricting commission through a ballot initiative. That initiative, Proposition 4, appears on your November ballot. And you were listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts, more local shows, and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW. Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Christian Camargo. On this program, as you might already know, we record and broadcast many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, and we replay them unedited, mostly in their entirety, as a public service. And today we are airing a forum held last week on the proposal to create an independent redistricting commission in Utah. That proposal appears on your ballot as Proposition 4. Here again is today's moderator, Benjamin Wood.
Let's talk a little bit about the current maps. We have the congressional maps up on the screens. We are sitting where that red star is in the off-pink. I'm bad with colors, but it's in the middle there. As you can see, Salt Lake County has been split into three parts. Clearly, no effort was made to keep Salt Lake County intact. And to Senator Wyler's point, you wouldn't be able to. You'd have to do some sort of division there. This initiative would have a guideline of preserving counties, cities, communities intact to the degree possible. You mentioned how your goal is not a specific outcome, but is there any specifics you can give the voters about what they might expect from the maps this panel would draw?
Again, we're not about an outcome, we're about a structural reform. And I think that, you know, this citizen commission is going to make decisions not based on self-interest, not based on partisan data. They're going to make it based on the best case scenario for the citizens of Utah. So I think this commission has worked well in other states and it will work well here in Utah.
And Senator, a somewhat flip of that question, you mentioned how these maps were approved with near unanimous support. Are you satisfied with the maps that we have currently, or do you see any potential problems?
You know, if I were king for a day, I would have probably drawn them differently. But, you know, everyone assumes that Salt Lake County was split into three portions to somehow mess over the Democrats or something like that. But let me give you the other perspective. The most important issues that our congressmen deal with and congresswomen deal with in Washington, D.C. is our federal lands. Two-thirds of this state is controlled and owned by the federal government. And the legislature adopted a principle in 2011 saying that we want all four of our House members to have a representation in the rural parts of the state. There's not a lot of legislation in Congress that affects Salt Lake County any differently than it affects any other county in a major metropolitan area in the other 49 states. But the issues over federal lands and natural resources, those affect Utah the most. And that's where Utah usually comes up on the short end of the stick. So each of those, this map was drawn, and I don't love the map, but it was drawn with consideration that all four congressmen and women would have rural constituents to answer to. And I think in that sense, it has served the state very, very well.
Again, we're not about an outcome, we're about a process. nationally, we see a group called Red State. It's a Republican group. Blue Map is the Democratic group. They're going to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, over the next couple years to influence how maps are drawn. They use partisan data. They manipulate districts based on those partisan data and consumer information. Big data has changed gerrymandering from gerrymandering to extreme gerrymandering. That hasn't hit Utah yet, but it will hit Utah, which will mean litigation and worse outcomes for our citizens as a whole. So again, we're ahead of the curve here. We want to put a constitutional framework in place that meets the requirements of the Utah Constitution so we can combat this flood of money and litigation that's coming to Utah. We think that the Citizen Commission, working in tandem with the legislature, is going to create a better structural process for our representative democracy.
The most recent Tribune-Hinckley Institute poll showed majority support for Proposition 4, particularly among Democrats. They supported by quite a wide margin. Among Republican voters, it had a plurality support. So it was the top answer, but not a technical majority. Is this initiative, or is redistricting in Utah, a partisan issue? Why don't we start with the senator?
Well, it's a partisan issue. Everything's about partisanship. If you look at the courts, there's been hundreds of, by the way, you know, there's been hundreds of cases on redistricting. And they all basically, I can boil them down to you in 1 second, 2 or 3 seconds, but that is, number one, you have to have proportionality. You can't make one district with 1 million people and the other one with 500,000. That'll get overturned every time. The other two is you cannot be purposefully discriminating against racial minorities. And that's where we've had problems in San Juan County with districts in their county here in Utah, which were not drawn by the legislature, but by the county commission. And the racial minority there, of course, is the Native American population. And that's where you've had ones overturned. The interesting thing about partisanship is in 2011, my friend Jim DeBacchus was the chairman of the Utah Democratic Party. And he said publicly at least 5 times during that year, no matter what the what the legislature does with the congressional maps, that the Democratic Party was going to sue. And so everybody waited, and they never sued. Do you know why? Every single attorney that the Utah Democratic Party hired for that lawsuit did research and came back and said, you don't have a suit. The state of Utah complied perfectly with the constitutional standards. You will lose. They went through 3 different attorneys. They never filed a lawsuit. Because why? Utah followed the Constitution. And when Jeff says that this will bring less litigation, we haven't, I mean, outside of San Juan County, which has its own problems here in Utah, we haven't had any problem with lawsuits over redistricting in Utah. This initiative has so many undefined terms, so many conflicts of interest, it'll invite litigation, not for years, but for decades. I promise you that. I'm an attorney. I might make some money off of it. So again, if that's what you want, please vote for it.
I'm glad you'll personally benefit from this.
Well, I said if it passes, I'm against it.
Groups that participate in the gerrymandering process, whether they be Republican or Democrat, one of the goals is to create more wasted votes. That's a goal. That's an objective. And they do that to create boundaries that serve one side or the other or an incumbent. And I ask you, how does a wasted vote sound to you? That's not a good outcome. That, again, status quo bias, that is not good that we are allowing groups spending hundreds of millions of dollars nationally to create more wasted votes for benefiting one side or the other. And I think we want to get ahead of this. We want to do it in a constitutional way. We want to do it in a fair way. We want to bring transparency and accountability. Our concept here creates a lot of transparency that isn't there right now. It's about fairness, it's about transparency. I mean, there's red maps, there's blue maps, and what we want to see is red, white, and blue maps that serve the citizens of the state in the most fair and transparent way.
Senator Wyler earlier referred to the spoils of victory, I think was the phrase, this idea that whoever wins gets to draw these maps. If we look at voter registration in the state, 47% of our voters are registered Republicans. Among our state House and Senate, the Republicans make up 83% of the seats, so not quite double, but considerably more than their share of voter registrations. I don't watch sports. I'm going to attempt a football metaphor here. Senator, is there not an issue with letting whoever wins the coin toss draw the lines on the field?
Well, yes, that would be a problem. I am a football fan, but let me just say...
He's also a BYU fan, I think I should disclose for the room.
It's true. Die hard. So that 47% figure is accurate, but the better story is, number one, there are four times as many registered Republicans to vote in the state than there are Democrats. But number two, the second biggest political party in the state is not the Democratic Party, it's the unaffiliated voters. There's about 600,000 of them. And how do they vote? Well, let's look at every statewide election in the last 20 years. They vote Republican because Gary Herbert gets 72% of the vote. You know, you could go with Mike Lee and Orrin Hatch and Bob Bennett before that. And Mitt Romney, you'll see in 3 weeks, he'll have over 70% of the vote. And so while you're taking those registered Republican figures, I think the much more accurate picture is a statewide election. Whether it's attorney general, state treasurer, state auditor, governor, U.S. senator, the Republicans usually get over 65 and often over 70% of the vote. That's where we know the voters are leaning, is for the Republican candidates. And so when you look at those figures, I think the 47% is accurate. But I think it's deceptive in this context.
But even those statewide numbers are smaller than the share of seats Republicans have in the House and Senate.
Yeah, and what I said on Trip Talk, and I'll say again, even if this state was exactly 51% Republican and 49% Democrat, and those voters were perfectly synonymous across the state, you know, uniformly put, you could still have Republicans win every seat, 51 to 49. So this idea that, you know, if 5% of the voters are communists, should 5% of the legislature be communist, communist party candidates who won? If 3% of the voters are United Utah, do we reserve 3 legislative seats? That's never how this country has operated. We have elections, and the winner wins, and then the winner has to represent all of the people in their district. I represent about 115,000 people in the state Senate. They're not all Republicans. Many of them are unaffiliated. Many of them are Democrats. And I do my best to listen to all of them and to hear them out and to be a good representative. That's our process. Hillary Clinton got more votes than Donald Trump. And of course, Al Gore did more than Bush, but we have this electoral college where the founding fathers thought, you know, that the electors would pick from the top 5 candidates, and that was before the emergence of political parties. But this idea that if 24% of the voters are registered Democrats, that they will automatically have 24% of the seats, that doesn't happen anywhere in the country.
Mr. Ratt, you've said you're looking at a process, you're not looking at an outcome, but is there anything about the current makeup of our state representatives that is indicative of this initiative?
Senator Wyler has championed anti-pornography, and to use the famous Supreme Court comment, you know pornography when you see it, you know gerrymandering when you see it. And I don't need to get into the past, because the past is not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to protect the integrity of our voting system. We're trying to protect the integrity of how we draw the maps going forward. This is about future generations. This isn't looking back.
I want to move away slightly from the debate over the proposition to the horizon post-election. We've seen legislative efforts on Prop 2, on Question 1, to forge a compromise and or craft something more palatable to the members of the legislature. If Prop 4 passes, Senator Wyler, you've mentioned how you expect litigation, you expect challenges in the courts. Do you expect legislative action that would undermine the vote if it passes?
Well, and you know, if I had an hour, you know, to lecture myself, I'd go through all the constitutional problems. I said on Trip Talk, and I'll say it again here, I believe if this passes, the legislature will either have to try to fix it or they'll sue to overturn it. And, one of the biggest conflicts of interest is the Utah legislature. We have our own law firm. They're called the Office of Legislative Research and General Counsel. We have about 19 attorneys there. And this proposition, because they didn't want you guys to be voting on a tax increase, rather than funding their efforts, they said, oh, we'll just steal the legislature's attorneys. And you want to talk about a conflict of interest, it's our attorneys, and then they're taking our attorneys and saying, well, now there are attorneys, and if there's any adversarial relationship that develops, it's trying to pit that same law firm against both sides. And I think if there's anything that's clearly going to undermine this, and I think when you pull that out of it, then there's no mechanism for a tax increase to fund a very expensive process. And there's a lot of other problems, but I don't think this proposition will go into law, either because the legislature will have to tweak it, or And that's probably with a tax increase, or they'll just sue and ask the courts to invalidate significant portions of it. And if you give me time, I could go through the top five or six constitutional problems with Proposition 4.
Let's hear from Mr. Reif first. What do you anticipate after the election if this passes?
So the previous Supreme Court Justice, Christine Durham, wrote a wonderful op-ed that I encourage you to all go read. And she said this is constitutional. And by the way, in our Constitution, the people of the state are the final authority. We have the ability to put a proposition up and have it voted and have it be equal weight to the legislature. So this is not unconstitutional. And scholars and past Supreme Court justices and litigation across this country has proven this. So this is not unconstitutional. It's easy to throw that label out. It's hard to defend it. With regards to the legislative, how the commission runs, they have the option to use the legislative research, but they can also set up their own group if they so choose. This is not a big issue, and it's, to me, it is a small price to keep our representative democracy healthy going forward.
That concern has been raised, as well as the membership requirements. Are there any of these concerns that you have heard where you might see points of compromise after the election?
We need to win this, and then we can talk about that.
Why don't we were going to reserve some time at the end for some audience questions, but if there's anyone that has a question now, I'd be happy to hear from those in the room. Yes, right here, sir.
If the commission submits a map and the legislature says no and gives their reason, then what happens? Who draws the map then?
So if the legislature doesn't have to take the map. So if they choose not to go with the commission's map, within 7 days of that, they have to explain to the public why that happens, why they chose not to. The public will have a chance to see who benefited from the changes, who didn't benefit, why, the reasoning behind it. If that's a good reasoning, then the map goes forward with the legislature. Again, we're leaving the legislature with the constitutional mandate to approve the final map. But they're going to have to do it in a transparent way. They're going to have to come before you, the citizens of the state of Utah, and say, this is why we went with a different map.
Well, are they forced to accept the map? It seems to me you've just said they can say why they don't like it and what ought to be changed, but then they can't substitute a map of their own?
They can come up with their own map, but they have to follow the standards that are set forth in the proposition, which is keeping communities together, keeping compact, contiguous communities together, not using partisan data, not using incumbent addresses. So they will be required to follow the same standards.
And if,
given our Utah Constitution, we did not feel it was appropriate to put together a binding commission like they have in many other states, because we wanted to make this constitutional.
But it's still not clear to me if the legislature acts virtually unanimously on political issues, and if they unanimously say, okay, we don't like your map and we're going to produce another map and here it is, and if you don't like it, vote us out.
Sunlight's a wonderful disinfectant. And I think if people have to come forward and explain why they did what they have to did, I think that's where conflict of interest will become apparent. I think people are going to ask who benefits. I think people are going to ask why. I think this is a transparent, bringing this out into the open, I think by its very nature creates a better process.
And I'm glad you mentioned Sunlight, because in 2011, with the legislature doing its Utah constitutional authority, they held 30 public hearings all over the state, public meetings. They put an online tool where any citizen could draw their own maps and submit it to the legislature, and many people did that, and many of their lines were adopted by the legislature. That's exactly what they did, was they did this in Sunlight. But nothing is good, sometimes nothing's good enough for some people. But to your very question, what would happen is the legislature would do its constitutional duty, it would adopt its own map, and then the lawsuits would begin. And Proposition 4 says that any one of Utah's 3.15 million residents has standing to sue over the map. And that wasn't far enough for Proposition 4. Anyone who incorporates in Utah also has standing. So if you are a Massachusetts-based progressive organization, all you have to do is start a 501c organization in Utah, get a P.O. box in Salt Lake, and now you have standing to sue. And so if the legislature doesn't adopt their maps, there's going to be lawsuits. I can promise you that, 100% guarantee. And furthermore, what if the commission, what if these seven members, these seven magical independent people, if they can't agree on one map, Then what happens? Well, lines 323 through 325 says, and then the commission would then send two maps to this Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court, violating all of our separation of powers. Now you're asking the judicial branch to choose the map when this is our Constitution, Article 9, Section 1 says that this is a legislative authority. And then if there's a lawsuit over the map the Chief Justice picks, then it comes right back to the Chief Justice to decide on that lawsuit. There are problems with redistricting. Proposition 4 creates more of them.
3.2 million citizens can already sue. And what we're trying to do is put standards in place so if lawsuits do happen, there's at least standards to go by. And I think those standards help protect the citizens of Utah and the voting integrity and our representative democracy.
And you were listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts, more local shows, and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW.
This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Christian Camargo. Today's recorded forum looks at the proposal to create an independent redistricting commission in Utah in an effort to combat potential or perceived gerrymandering, where political districts are drawn along partisan lines. In this final segment, the panel takes further questions from audience members.
Thanks for addressing this important issue today. Scientific American just published a piece, Geometry versus Gerrymandering, which I highly recommend everyone read. And this, since we're here on a higher education campus, perhaps it's near and dear to some people's hearts, but the subtitle is Mathematicians, basically, so saving us from ourselves. But the author argues that, in fact, you can't necessarily just identify it by a weird shape, that's insufficient for the standards, which I understand Prop 4 addresses, but specifically they talk about a new tool called Markov chain Monte Carlo. I'm not a mathematician, but I'm wondering in terms of then look the commission looking, you've got these guidelines for them to follow, but in terms of then perhaps doing a double check, whether it's from the legislature or otherwise, how would those maps perhaps be validated against other standards that are rapidly being developed from apparently mathematicians?
Let me jump in. So I'm going to read again from the language of Proposition 4. It first of all says, the legislature and the commission shall use judicial standards and the best available data and scientific and statistical measuring, including measures of partisan symmetry, to assess whether the proposed redistricting plan abides by and conforms to redistricting standards. The very next line says, partisan political data and information, such as partisan election results, voting records, political party affiliations, and residential addresses of incumbents and candidates, may not be considered. So, again, talk about conflicts of interest. Partisan symmetry means if 55% of the voters voted for party A, then they should win, and they win this many seats. Then, if you flip that off and say 55% of the voters voted for party B, would they win the same number of seats? And so this is one of the scientific methods. And then it says, but you can't look at any partisan data to figure out. That's impossible to do. Either you're going to look at partisan data and calculate the partisan symmetry, or you're not. But here's the most important thing. We've had several, so there's racial profiling in districting. There's racial disparity in redistricting cases, which are constitutional standards are clear. And then there's this relatively new partisan gerrymandering. And the U.S. Supreme Court, again this year, said there are no standards for partisan gerrymandering, and we're not going to take this up. And I think with Justice Kennedy's retirement and his replacement, I don't think we're going to see that changing in the near future. And so this is not what Mr. Wright says, I know it when I see it. In fact, on a very similar election issue just in August, the Utah Supreme Court said the standard can't be I know it when I see it when it comes to election law. It has to be something measurable. There's nothing measurable here with partisanship. And that's why the U.S. Supreme Court continues to say, no, we're not going to draw the lines for you. That's the job of the state legislatures.
I think that because the Supreme Court pushed this down the road, I think it makes better boundaries in Prop 4 even more important, because we've got to handle our own problems here in the state. The commission can use scientific data to help formulate the maps. They cannot use partisan data. And partisan symmetry is a test after the fact. So it's like you students getting a test and then after the fact checking the test. That is what partisan symmetry is. And partisan symmetry is about making sure everybody's votes count, not just Democrats or Republican votes. It is a scientific process after the fact, but the commission cannot use partisan data in making up the maps.
Senator, I want to thank you for being here. I've heard you mention a couple times how you're a lawyer, and that there would be like lots of suing going on in litigation across this process. But the thing is, why would these people go to court if they don't have a chance of winning? So finding a perfect plaintiff, nobody is actually going to go up and spend resources on something they might not win. What do you have to say to something like that?
Well, so there's so many undefined terms. I'll give you a couple of examples. Line 108 says that they should follow redistricting standards to the greatest extent practicable. So if I think that they didn't follow them to the greatest extent practical, then I can sue. Line
16... Well, I already can do that right now.
No, because that's not the standard right now. Line 116 talks about the legislature and the commission considering compactness in the redistricting plan. That's line 116. But there's no requirement for the legislature and commission to use the same measures of compactness. And just something really simple. When you talk about local communities and numbers, there's nothing in Proposition 4 that says whether you use the census figures or the state figures when it comes to those communities of interest. And I promise you there'd be a lawsuit over that because they don't match up exactly. And so right now, like I told you, even though the head of the Democratic Party promised to sue, he didn't sue because we followed all of the constitutional standards. This Proposition 4 creates a whole myriad of new standards that have never been tested in the court before. Like I said, the one that it prohibits is the address of the incumbent, which the courts have said that one's okay. Almost everything else in here, it would be new to Utah. And those would all be challenged. Many of them, I believe, will be challenged in court.
The senator and Nancy Pelosi are actually on the same side on this because she opposed redistricting reform and commissions in California.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
So the senator and Nancy Pelosi on the same side opposing independent commissions. What is the outcome in California? Less litigation, a better process, greater voter satisfaction, and greater voter turnout. Those are all good outcomes that I think strengthen representative democracy. So again, you hear a lot of people say, well, it's not a perfect system. In fact, I was on a radio show with Senator, and he was saying that it wasn't a perfect system. Well, there again, a status quo bias. Let's fix it. Let's put something forward that actually addresses some of the problems that we have.
And I've said here, this is not a perfect process, but what I'm telling you, after intensely studying Proposition 4, I honestly, sincerely believe this creates more problems than it solves.
And I honestly and sincerely believe it doesn't.
A component of that question was the idea that the typical resident of Utah does not have the means to mount a challenge against the state. I just want to make sure, are you satisfied? Was your question answered? Is anything you'd like to follow up?
So it wasn't necessarily answered because it was more of the idea around people don't necessarily have the resources to take these kinds of complaints to court. It's not worth their time. And like a lot of Supreme Court cases, you need to find the perfect plaintiff if you even want to have a chance to win the case. So why would it be in our interest to put forward these resources when we have zero chance?
Well, I'm not expecting you to sue, but what I explained is this proposition. I've never seen, in my over 20 years of practicing law, I've never seen anything like it, but it's lines 384 to 386. The initiative not only gives individuals in the state, but it gives any persons or corporations or think tanks or whatever whose principal place of business, so anyone in the world could create an organization, register with a Utah address, and then file suit in Utah. So you're going to have, I'm with you. A college student at the University of Utah is not going to file this lawsuit. What you're going to have is you're going to have these organizations who pool money from thousands of donors and think that they can get a seat carved that the Democrats can't lose. I mean, you take Salt Lake City. I could draw that map for you, but that is gerrymandering. And just any of you who think you're against gerrymandering because you want a Democratic safe seat, that is by definition gerrymandering. And I love to point that out.
It's Halloween, so therefore we can be We can think about the boogeyman, and they keep throwing out the boogeyman is litigation, but the facts are very different. In every state that has implemented independent commissions and put standards in place, litigation has gone down.
You can't have litigation go down in Utah because we don't have any. Other than San Juan County, which has nothing to do with Proposition 4, we don't have any litigation. So how are we going to decrease litigation over redistricting when we have none?
We put standards in place. And anybody can litigate. Somebody could litigate right now. This doesn't create an opportunity for litigation. I think this actually clamps down on litigation and gets ahead of it. I think people are going to be reticent to litigate if an independent commission comes up with maps that are transparent and have standards. So I think this decreases litigation.
Senator, you've mentioned there's been talk about the standards that this initiative would put in place. And Senator, you were not involved in the last round of redistricting. There was, however, a non-binding resolution in the legislature that would have established some of these standards, similar standards, contiguous, compact, you know, deferent to boundaries to the degree possible. That resolution was defeated in the legislature. The lawmakers of the state rejected putting standards on their own redistricting process. You were part of that vote. Can you speak to why that proposal was rejected?
Well, I saw that proposal much as I see Proposition 4. It's an attempt to create areas of litigation where we don't have them in Utah. And so you start putting those into place. And now, right now, I'm telling you, and I'll repeat it again, the courts look at two things. Are they proportionately equal? These four districts, when they were drawn based on the 2010 data, were within one person of each district. No more had more than one person than any other district. The other thing is are they drawn to intentionally discriminate against racial minorities? Those are the main two standards that the courts enforce right now. When you add a bunch of standards on top of that, you give creative plaintiffs, and they are out there. We have lots of litigation. I make my living off of it. You give creative plaintiffs more things to sue over. And that's exactly what Proposition 4 does, and that's what that same non-binding resolution was attempting to do.
And again, I encourage you to go read Christine Durham's op-ed. She's one of the greatest jurists in Utah. She's our past Supreme Court justice. And she kind of tears this argument apart because she believes this is constitutional. It fits within the framework. It sets up a better process, and it will avoid litigation. So, you know, attorneys can disagree, but I encourage you to read Christine Durham's op-ed.
Well, Mr. Raff, if I could follow up with that question, you know, had the legislature acted in the past to put some of these guidelines in place for themselves, I mean, is this initiative at all in response to a failure to act? We've heard that from the other propositions on the ballot, that the legislature failed to act on certain issues, thus necessitating the initiative. Is there anything that you have been disappointed to see the legislature ignore on this issue?
This isn't about the past. This is about the future. We see all the problems in the United States. You know, Pennsylvania is a mess. You know, Maryland, Wisconsin, these are a mess, and we want to avoid that going forward here. Again, this is about our representative democracy. During the last election, we heard a lot of people talk about the system's rigged on both sides of the aisle. Well, we don't want that to happen here in Utah, and we want this process, this independent commission of fellow citizens, not magical people, fellow citizens, to set the standards and draw the maps in a fair, transparent way for generations to come.
Any other questions from the room? Yes.
So my question is for the senator. So since you oppose Prop 4, but with increasing levels of voter dissatisfaction on this issue, what do you feel should be done about this, if anything?
Well, I guess we're going to see the amount of voters' dissatisfaction when we have the election. And I love the initiative process, and a perfect initiative, because this issue has come up every session for the last three sessions, should Utah repeal the death penalty? That's a yes or no question. There's no how, okay? It's a yes or no question. So people look at Proposition 2, which is, should Utah legalize medical marijuana? And they say yes, okay? But legalizing medical marijuana, which is still illegal on the federal level, there's a how involved. How do you do it? And that's why you're seeing this compromise. With redistricting, I think people, if you ask them, should we make this process less political or should we make it more independent, people are going to say yes. But again, it's a how do you do that? And so the how questions, in my opinion, are not ideally situated for the Citizens Initiative. And one of the problems is when I run bills, sometimes I'll spend a year with stakeholders and meetings, and we'll meet for 6 or 8 months, and I introduce legislation. And then once more eyes gets on it, then I can make amendments and tweaks throughout the process. Once they hold their first public hearing and start collecting signatures, they can't make any tweaks to it. And the how I believe in this is the problem. And I'm not sure that more than 1% of the people who, the 190,000 people that you heard about, I'm not convinced more than 1% of them read through all the pages of this Proposition 4 and comprehended it. And with Christine Durham, I love Christine Durham. I sponsored a resolution honoring her this year in the legislature when she retired. But no judge prejudges a case. She hasn't heard the arguments against it. And I think she, like most voters, are saying, yeah, let's try to make it more independent. But let's do so without violating the Constitution. And let's do so without creating contradictory standards and terms.
I think she looked at it implicitly for constitutional value.
She hasn't heard the arguments
and came down on our side. You know, I take issue with saying 190,000 people didn't understand what they signed.
I give
a little more faith and credit to the citizens of Utah who know there's an issue and who want to address that issue. And I think that an independent commission is so common sense. Transparency, accountability, these are common sense. And, you know, Better Boundaries was formed with a lot of thought and process in forming the initiative, in forming the proposition. It's made up of Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated, you know, voters and citizens of Utah. This is a Utah solution to a Utah problem. So we were very thoughtful in the way we came up with the initiative and the way we executed the initiative and the proposition. And we feel like this is a really good common sense solution to a problem.
So this is for Senator Wyler. Since you've just say you support the initiative process, but you have critiques of it, for example, from the first hearing, text can't be changed in with new information. Well, the legislature set the boundaries for the initiative process. So to take a step back from Prop 4 and to look at the initiative process generally, there are also criticisms, for example, the relatively high bar, the ability to at the last minute withdraw your signature. So what are some tweaks to the initiative process that you think would improve it and while safeguarding it over time? Thank you.
Well, again, I support the initiative process. Most of the Western states have initiative process. Most of the Eastern states don't. I don't know if you know that. It's kind of a Western U.S. phenomenon. But it's not fair to collect a signature and then change the language. That I can't fix that because you can't go out and collect 100,000 signatures and then start changing the language and turn it in and say, well, all these people support it. So that's not fair. And so there are just some things that are inherently difficult. Now, right now you have to collect, I think, 10% of the vote in 26 of the 29 Senate districts. It's never meant to be easy. I don't think we want to become like California and have a litany. I'm already getting, I think, feedback on there's voter fatigue. We have four ballot questions, the three propositions, the ballot question, and then three constitutional amendments, and then 80 judges, you know, and people are, you know, my friends and my neighbors and people on Facebook are saying, why are we getting all this homework with the ballot? Why can't we just vote on, you know, Mia Love or Ben McAdams or Mitt Romney or Jenny Wilson? So I don't know if the voters want this either. And we've never had a ballot in the history of the state as complicated as this one. But the good news is we've never had a completely mail-in general election. So now you get almost a month with your ballot and you can do your homework and do your research. So I think that those two go well. But, you know, I think the biggest complaint I hear about the initiative process is it requires too many signatures from too many rural areas, and that's something we can look at. But you know, it's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to have to climb a mountain to do the initiative because you are circumventing the normal process, which is the legislative process.
Any comments on the initiative process? You've been through it, and I imagine it wasn't too simple.
This is an area where the senator and I might have an agreement on, is that I don't think, for initiative-wise, we should become California. And I think setting a high bar is not a bad thing. I would say that Better Boundaries went through trial by fire here, and we did it. We only needed around 150,000 signatures, and we got 190,000 from Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated voters across the state. So we set out with a goal to get on the ballot, and we did it. But I don't think it should be an easy process either. So maybe there's some agreement here.
That's likely the time that we have for questions. I want to make sure each of our guests gets a chance to make sort of a synopsizing closing statement. Mr. Wright, you gave the opening statement, but the last few questions have gone to the senator. Whoever feels they'd like to go first.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to just end where I began. This is an inherently political process, and watching, you don't want to eat the sausage after you watch it made, but I do think the Utah legislature, I don't know how many of you have ever visited le.utah.gov, but every committee hearing we have, every Senate vote we take, every House vote, they're all broadcast live, and then they're all archived. You can go on to our website right now and listen to those 30 redistricting hearings from 2011 and hear what was said and hear what was presented. We routinely get the high marks. We win over all 49 other states every year for the openness and transparency of our legislative website. So this is not a perfect process, but I am gravely concerned that this is going to get embroiled in further litigation. I am very, you know, despite my respect for Christine Durham, I think any judge will tell you that they read the briefs from both sides before they come to a decision. So even if she's inclined to say she thinks this is constitutional, I have 19 legislative attorneys that work for the legislature that have that I've asked questions to, and I didn't mean to be insulting. I stand on corners and I watch people sign petitions. I collected signatures for my last race. People stop. They spend less than a minute, you know, talking to someone and they sign it. You can't read through a 26-page marijuana initiative in a minute. You can't even read through this. And even if you read it, I'm a lawyer, I'm a lawmaker. The first time I read this Proposition 4, I didn't know what political symmetry meant. So even if I read the words, I had to go and research, what does political symmetry mean? And that's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to be condescending. I think the voters usually get it right. I think the legislature, when we get it wrong, we usually get it right. But when we get wrong, we can come back in special session and fix it. And we do that every year. So, you know, I know that there's a problem. I think that we're trying to, you know, I think that this is not the right Band-Aid for the problem. And let me just end with one thing I meant to say at the beginning and I didn't. The Constitution does not recognize partisanship. It does not recognize political parties. Political parties formed after 1787 when the Constitution was enacted. And so what we've done, what the oath I take as a Utah State Senator is to follow the Utah Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. What Proposition 4 is trying to do is they're trying to elevate partisanship up to a constitutional standard. And I don't think that that's the right approach.
Mr. Wright.
Ronald Reagan said gerrymandering is a national disgrace and undemocratic. This is foundational. If we don't get our elections right, nothing else works. We need representative democracy to work in our community, our state, and our nation, and I could even argue the world. This puts in place a common sense reform and structure, independent commission, standards, transparency, accountability. This is about the future. It's about the future of our representative democracy. And I encourage each and every one of you to go to betterboundaries.org, read this, ask questions, and vote for Proposition 4, because I think at the very, very heart of all of this is the strength and future of our representative democracy.
That's the time we have. I'd like to thank everyone for coming. Remember to vote, and if we could give a round of applause to our guest, Jeff Wright of Better Boundaries, and Senator Todd Wyler.
Thank you to Jeff Wright and Senator Todd Wyler for speaking as part of today's forum, and to Benjamin Wood for moderating the discussion. If you'd like to hear the full discussion, you can find it on our website, kcpw.org. Today's forum was co-sponsored by the Bennion Center and was recorded last week on October 24th. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund, and I'm Christian Camargo, your producer and host of this program. As always, thanks for listening.